talking to me?
Funny like I'm a clown, I use you.
Here's Johnny.
He's looking at you, kid.
We're on a mission from God.
Go ahead. Make my day.
I'm going to make him an offer again with you.
Good morning and welcome to the We Are Movie Geeks podcast. Today is June 6th. I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Betts.
And my name's Jim Tudor.
Jim Tudor is here. Oh, my gosh. Oh. Jim Tudor is filling in for Michelle, who's on the road. Yeah. In fact, she's going to be on the road for the entire month of June. Michelle won't be back in the studio with us until July. So she's going to call in so we can talk to her because we can't...
She's following the One Direction tour, isn't she?
She is.
I believe she's, so.
I think she got a job in Branson.
Well, with Yakov Smirnoff?
I will use my most pretty girl voice to kind of fill that gap here on the show.
Now will
that's
we know
okay.
the difference.
That's okay. So Jim Tudor's filling in. Jim has never been in our studio before, but that's okay. We're glad you are. Jim writes for...
I write for Zeke Film.
Zeke Films.
That's my own site, is ZekeFilm.org. I'll talk about that in a minute, but I come from a bigger site called Twitch Film, which I am one of many contributors there.
So you're with Twitch and Zeke.
Twitch and Zeke, that's
correct. Sounds like a disease. Doc, I got the Twitch and the Zeke.
Well, that's a vaudeville hack, maybe.
It is. You know, we film people have our afflictions.
That's true.
But, it's Twitch Film, which is a, you know, big global... Mm-hmm. You know, a monstrosity thingamajig that some people know about. Mm-hmm. And I've been there since 2005, which was shortly after it started. I got lucky. I fell into it. I was, doing some stuff for a smaller site. One of the writers mm-hmm. gravitated over there, and boom, I followed him in here.
And you review movies over there.
I review movies. Okay. And I, yes.
What was the first movie you reviewed for Twitch? Do you recall?
For Twitch, I'm not sure. No. For the first movie I reviewed proper... Oh, boy. I want to say Matrix Revolutions was one of those early ones for me.
Yeah, yeah.
The third Matrix?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Yeah. I wouldn't republish that review, but yeah.
All right. And then you started Zeke Film.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about Zeke Film. What is Zeke Film?
Well, Zeke Film, it's a .org, so that means it's a non-for-profit. And the idea there is we are promoting the idea of community through cinema, which is something you do a lot of, Tom. You do all this work. Working around town, kind of, introducing movies. And we like to, host these movie nights and have people discuss them and just engage with it and, kind of push the communal aspect. I mean, here we all are in the dark together having this shared experience. Why not talk about it? And so with Zeke, we hope to do more of that. And we are rebuilding the website. And in just a few weeks, it's going to be the new 1,000 times better, far more awesome Zeke Film site. Okay. So I hope everybody will check that out.
Are you the webmaster over there?
Yes and no. Yeah. I'm about the most technically inept internet guy you've ever seen. I don't like computers. But yet, yes, I run the site. I'm the site manager. I worry about the content.
Okay. You got a lot of people writing over there.
We got a nice little stable of folks. So good people. Good content coming in all the time.
All right. And then you don't just review movies over there. You guys are kind of like our side. Do you do news stories and retrospectives and things like that?
For interviews every now and then.
I recall you zeroing in on certain filmmakers or stars and trying to look into their more obscure offerings.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think that's kind of interesting, that assigning each other a Hitchcock film or a film with a certain star or whatever that doesn't get a lot of attention.
Oh, yeah, that's my most fun thing that we do. It's called Film Admissions, and we will each month just assign an actor or a topic or a genre or whatever, and everybody who contributes to the site who wants to participate picks the biggest, most noteworthy one they've never seen, and you just admit to it, because even the biggest film buffs have movies they've never seen. Okay, this month's theme for June will be fairy tale movies. All right. And so we found a list of fairy tale movies, which goes very dark, stuff like Suspiria, and even they cite The Matrix as having fairy tale themes. So, not just Disney movies, which is what springs to mind when you say fairy tale movies. Yeah. So, okay, biggest fairy tale movie you've never seen, and I'm looking at this list, and you know what? Despite being a big Jim Henson, George Lucas, and David Bowie fan, I've never seen Labyrinth.
I'd never seen Labyrinth until last year.
Yeah, I've never seen Labyrinth. And people's jaws drop like, what? You're a movie freak. Yeah. How can that be? And it's like, I'm admitting it right now. Yeah. will write a paragraph. It'll be part of my film admissions. And
well, I've never seen the whole thing.
But you've got to watch
really?
It.
Really?
You've got to watch it, though, right?
Oh, yeah.
What was last month?
Last month was Audrey Hepburn.
Okay. There's probably a lot of her movies I haven't seen.
For me too. But, you know, I have to go to the biggest, most famous one, and that was My Fair Lady for me.
I would think that it would be Breakfast at Tiffany's would be her most famous. But that's the biggest box office one is probably My Fair Lady.
It has to be something I've never seen. I'd seen Breakfast at Tiffany's, but one of our other contributors hadn't. So she wrote about Breakfast at Tiffany's, and you know this whole thing drops as one big story. Okay, we all have a paragraph. You know, it's fun. It's a lot of fun.
My Fair Lady's boring.
Okay, I use a trip.
I liked it.
I've never seen Gandhi.
I've never seen Gandhi either, Tom. I've never seen Chariots of Fire. I've never seen all these big, giant, overblown '80s movies.
The ones that won all the Oscars in the '80s.
Yeah,
Out of Africa.
Didn't see it.
Did you see Reds?
Yes, I've seen Reds.
Last Emperor.
Reds win?
No, it won Best Director.
Yeah, Best Director. Okay. It lost to Chariots.
Yeah, a lot of big. Bloated, boring movies won Best Picture in the 80s. I guess Platoon is the exception. But see, what are your favorite movies of all time, Jim Tudor?
Oh, gosh. Well, what got me into this as a kid is Star Wars. I'm one of those. It's not the most original answer.
How old were you when you saw Star Wars for the first time?
Well, you know, I was very young when it came out. I was alive. I was here. But I was three. I was not able to see the film in the theater. But I caught it on this 1979 re-release, and there was an Empire Strikes Back trailer before it. And I just remember that. That's etched into my brain.
So is that your favorite movie then, Star Wars?
Yeah. Really? Yeah, I won't say Star Wars is the greatest. Yeah, I won't say Star Wars is the greatest movie ever made. It's not the greatest movie ever made, of course.
I prefer Star Crash.
Star Crash, of course you would. The Roger Corman Star Wars ripoff.
Oh, yeah.
Much
more. I've seen it many more times than I've seen Star Wars.
Well, could you have Star Crash if not for Star Wars?
Probably not.
That's
irrelevant.
That's irrelevant. We're talking about what we like
the most. What are some of your other favorite movies, Jim?
Well, I love Double Indemnity, the Billy Wilder film noir. Singing in the Rain is a favorite, of course. What the heck else? I love John Ford movies. I love Brian De Palma movies. I love Westerns. I love car crash movies. Film noir already?
Yeah. Okay. So you're looking forward to that De Palma documentary. I hope we get that here in St. Louis.
Yes. I am very much looking for. I cannot wait. That's probably, Jim, my most anticipated film of the summer.
Oh, really?
There's none of these big, giant summer movies out there that I'm not looking forward to any tentpoles. The De Palma documentary.
Yeah.
I want that.
Awesome. So De Palma, who are your favorite directors then? De Palma and...
Yeah,
Ford.
Ford. I like Anthony Mann a lot.
Discovered his westerns about 20 years ago. They're pretty great,
aren't they? Amazing.
The ones he did with Jimmy Stewart.
Winchester 73.
Naked Spur.
Right.
Good stuff.
Great movies. Everybody should check those out.
They are great.
I don't know. I'd never like to miss a Quentin Tarantino movie or a Wes Anderson or, you know, all those, you know, the usual suspects.
Yeah, Russ Meyer.
You know, I haven't seen enough Russ Meyer. I watched Beyond the Valley of the Dolls. That was
masterpiece.
That was nutty.
Oh, yeah. What about Bud Bedeker? I learned about him about 10 years ago watching the Randolph Scott stuff.
Right.
And it's pretty great. Yeah.
If anybody hasn't seen Bud Bedeker, there's a great six movie box set out there of Bud Bedeker, Randolph Scott movies that everybody should watch with the tall T and
whatever happened to Randolph Scott? And who are some of your favorite actors besides Randolph Scott?
That's right.
Randolph Scott, I wouldn't cite as one of my favorite actors, but he's just fine.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. I have to plead guilty to not being somebody that actors.
You don't make a list?
I don't make a lot of lists. I'm bad. This is bad internet managing that I don't do lists, but because everybody loves lists. But I don't know. Who do you guys like?
Charles Bronson.
Of course. There's
Clint Eastwood, Burt Reynolds, Vincent Price.
Vincent Price.
Harold Lloyd.
I love all those guys.
Yes.
Warren Oates.
Buster Keaton.
Ooh, Warren Oates. Yeah. No, I love
Don
Warren
Knotts.
Okay. Yeah. Don Knotts. Yeah. Interesting.
Steve McQueen.
Yeah.
Boris Karloff, Bela Lugosi, Lon Chaney.
Oh, yeah. The usuals.
Christopher Lee, Peter Cushing.
Those guys are great.
Yeah.
Pam Grier.
Cagney.
Pam Greer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Jimmy Cagney. Mm-hmm, you know, he's great. Mm-hmm. You know, just about everything. Oh, Bogey. Yeah.
Bogey.
Yeah, Bogey. That's right. Humphrey Bogart. Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. That's terrific stuff.
No,
yeah.
Great movies. Okay. Yeah. What else you got, Tom?
Well, let's move on. But we're glad you're here.
No, yes. Well,
actually, what's your favorite movie so far in 2016, Jim?
Oh, that's a good question.
Oh, yes. Yeah, my favorite movie in 2016 is... there's been several very good ones, and I haven't even seen all the most highly acclaimed ones either. Yeah.
Have you seen The Lobster?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's on my top five. Yeah. It's not my favorite. It's my favorite is probably by a narrow margin, Sing Street.
Okay.
And yeah, that's a good choice.
That's one of Jim's favorites as well.
Yeah, that was my first 5-star review this year.
Yes.
Yeah.
Sing Street, and then, of course, probably also with Jim here, Captain America. Mm-hmm.
Civil War.
Yeah, that's a terrific movie that does very little wrong, I think.
Yes.
And
restores your faith in the superhero film, I think. Yes.
Did you lose faith in the superhero film?
Never completely. Almost did last summer with Fantastic Four, but I bounced back.
Yeah. Batman versus Superman?
That disappointed me quite a bit.
That hurt.
Yes, yes.
Speaking of superheroes, I got some presents for you guys. Jim, do you have either of these buttons?
No, I'm not.
Oh, you do now. I'm giving Jim the official The Avengers Superhero Club button.
Oh, wow.
Thank you.
And I'm giving Jim Tudor the official Amazing Spider-Man Superhero Club button.
Oh, thank you, Tom. This is awesome. Spider-Man's my favorite superhero.
And this is the mid-60s reiteration of the Avengers with Cap and Giant Man, Hawkeye, Scarlet Witch, and Quicksilver.
Okay, well, don't get too excited. Those are repro buttons.
This is bad for radio. Listen to that.
we've got to fire the studio.
Yeah, the bags, the cellophane bag that I'm taking this out of. But this button is huge. This is this is one of these enormous 2-inch or 3-inch buttons, Tom.
Yeah, almost as big as my Mary Marvel Marching Society.
Button. Oh, they had that one.
They had a repro.
I remember that one. Yeah, it's like red and white.
Or Make Mine Marvel. That's what mine says.
Yeah, I was at Wonderfest over the weekend, and there's this guy that all he does is sell repro stuff. But it's nice repro stuff. Repros of the Aurora Monster Model boxes. And repros of the really nice board games from the 60s, like Outer Limits and Land of the Giants and Green Hornet.
Oh,
stuff
great.
Stuff that you can't find because it's too expensive, but he repros them and does it really. And movie posters.
Very nice.
There's a lot of that stuff out there. All right, let's talk about the top 12 of the box office. Michelle usually does this, but she's not here, as we said, so I'm going to have to do it.
You want to do it Casey Kasem style again?
We did that a couple weeks ago, and that was fun. All right.
Number
12 is Money Monster. I didn't like Money Monster. You see Money Monster, Jim?
No, you see, again, I'm in here, and I have to... I can lie.
Okay.
I can lie. I'll lie. I'll say I like the part where the Money Monster ate George Clooney.
There you go.
That's right.
He's made of cash.
It would have been a more entertaining movie had that happened. Number 11, Love and Friendship. That is the Jane Austen. Did you ever see that, Jim?
I didn't get it. I'm going to maybe try to see that the next couple of nights.
It's really good.
I very much want to see it.
Okay, it's very, very good. Yeah. I saw it. I didn't review it, but I would have given it 4.5 solid stars had I reviewed it.
If I could stand staring at that homely Kate Beckinsale, as Michael Bay would say.
People love this film.
It's a little crowd-pleaser.
And
it's only like 90 minutes, too.
Zips right past. Yeah.
All right, so that was number 11. Number 10, The Nice Guys. I liked that pretty much.
Did you see that, James? No.
Jim Batts reviewed that and gave it like 3.5, I think.
Well, maybe 2.5, 3. I was kind of on the fence on it.
Yeah.
Some of it that was too much. And I finally heard another critic saying, "Why is Ryan Gosling doing Lou Costello in the middle of it?" So I wasn't the only one that was disturbed by that.
Well, it made $3.5 million. Is barely in the top 10 at number 10. Number 9 is The Jungle Book. We've all seen The Jungle Book. That made $4.2 million. That's really good. Number 8. This was kind of a surprise. Number 8 was Pop Star, Never Stop, Never Stopping, which we'll be reviewing here in a few minutes. I thought that would have been 3rd or 4th.
Number 8,
it only made $4.6 million.
Very
surprising. And Michelle
has
written the big flop of the weekend.
I am not surprised for some reason.
The marketing, it's one of the few films, I'll say, that not all the funny stuff is in the trailers and the commercials. And I think, I guess a lot of people are just turned off by the subject matter, that they're tired of the boy bands, the Justin Bieber type stuff, but we'll talk about it later, but I think it's one that might be discovered on video.
It looks like something people might see on TV, so they say, why should I go to the theater and see this?
Yeah.
It's a shame. People involved.
Yeah, it's a funny movie.
Sure.
All right.
It's certainly better than number 7.
Number 7, Neighbors 2 Sorority Rising. Made $4.7 million. So that beat Popstar? That's hard to believe.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
In its second or third weekend?
Yeah, yeah.
Crazy. Yeah, but Popstar's much... Did you see Neighbors 2? I thought
Popstar... I didn't see Neighbors 1.
Oh, neither one. Yeah, Popstar's is much better than Neighbors 2,
I would never
tell you that.
Understand the nuances of Neighbors 2 having not seen Neighbors 1.
Yeah,
so
you might have.
I didn't go.
Okay.
Well, the mythology would be lost on that.
Okay, number 6 was Captain America Civil War. That's out of the top 5. Made $7.6 million. Its global haul stands at... Oh, gosh, I don't know. What is... I can't...
A billion,
541,157. How can they get that down to the very dollar?
That's a juggernaut, man.
All right, number 5 was Alice Through the Looking Glass.
Oh.
No, I take that back.
No.
Number 5 is Sony's The Angry Birds, $9.8 million. I didn't see that.
That
was reviewed at our site by Dane Marty, who liked it. Alice Through the Looking Glass is number 4 in its second week with $10.7 million. Worldwide, the Disney sequel has made $176 million, and I have no interest in seeing it, but I probably will. My kids will drag me.
Mine too.
Yeah. At number 3 is Me Before You. Did anybody see that?
No, I did not see that.
I regret not seeing it. I couldn't, and it's apparently a controversial film.
Is it?
Yes. It's about the paraplegic community, or the handicapable community. I don't know what the term is. They're is having a problem.
Be careful.
With it. Yes, I'm the guy treading on thin ground.
Is it the guy in the wheelchair not handicapped? Is that what they're mad about?
Well, no. I think that I think he is seriously. I'm assuming he's seriously considering ending it or whatever. That he thinks his life is worthless or something. And the only reason that he finds value in life is because of this sprightly. I guess would she be considered? What do they call
the manic pixie dream girl?
The manic pixie dream girl. Maybe is Emily Clark's character in it.
But is the actor really a paraplegic?
Oh no, he's not. Okay. Sam Clayton is from The Hunger Games. He's a hunky stud.
Okay, I thought maybe that's what they were meant.
He's got to fake it.
But they didn't cast, because there's probably some paraplegic actors out there.
Well, you know, sometimes when actors play people with, like, a broken tooth or something, they'll actually go to the dentist. I mean, maybe this guy could go to lengths to make himself,
his spine snapped.
Temporarily. For the picture.
Yeah, injected with something
does,
that'll put
what
his
he
legs
does for his art. All right, so that was number 3. It made a healthy $18.3 million at the box office. And number 2 was X-Men Apocalypse. In its second week, it made $22.3 million. Fox's X-Men Apocalypse does it again and leads the charge globally, generating another $106.7 million in 67 territories this weekend, and thus takes the sequel's total over $400 million worldwide.
Wow.
Did you get a chance to see that with your
kids? I have not. I got to take my kids to
that. Have you seen that, James?
Oh, sure. I saw it. Yeah. It's proving again that audiences love big blue characters in movies.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I in my review of it on the podcast a couple of weeks ago, I forgot to mention that Oscar Isaac is Apocalypse. Oscar Isaac, terrific actor. What a dull villain Apocalypse is.
Oh, yeah.
My gosh. You know, it just sucks the air out of the movie whenever he is there saying, "I'm going to end humanity, this disease on the world." I was like, oh, come on. Man.
Okay.
Not interesting. Sorry.
Did you review it? No, Michael reviewed it.
Yes.
I reviewed it.
Did you review it?
Not for you.
Did you give it a positive review, Joe?
No.
No? Okay. No.
You were in the majority.
I thought,
you guys are making me not want to go see it.
Hey, man. We came out of that screening, Jim, and you were there, right?
Yeah.
We came out of that screening, and most of the local critics were loving it or liking it.
Yeah.
I remember that being the case. And I was standing there kind of going, I don't know, guys.
The weakest X-Men film, but of the last three, it's the weakest. That's
Gosh, yes. Yeah. And the director, Bryan Singer. Now, whatever happened to this guy? He was a cool director. He made The Usual Suspects, for crying out loud. That was a good movie.
Oh, and he made Jack the Giant Slayer, which was on TV in my motel room over the weekend.
I
like that movie.
Which kind of made him go back to the X-Men. The disaster of Valkyrie. Yeah. Didn't help much. So.
All right. So the number one spot is Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Out of the Shadows. It made $35.2 million domestically, and its global take is $69.25 million in 41 territories around the world. I didn't see... I've never seen any of the
That's a lot of money.
Ninja Turtles.
I didn't even
see the ones that were made in the 90s.
Yeah, I saw the first two that were made in the 90s.
Feldman?
Yeah, that Jim Henson's company did the turtle effects for the costumes. And these ones, they're CGI that Michael Bay produced. I haven't seen either one of them.
No.
So, you haven't either.
I was not opposed to sitting through it until I don't know. I just thought better of it. And yeah, everyone says it's god-awful and horrible. But they said that about the Turtles movies in the 90s, and now everybody affectionately remembers that.
Oh, yeah, we showed
that.
One at midnight at the Tivoli a few months ago, and it was packed.
It was packed?
Oh, yeah.
Which one did you watch?
Oh, I think the first one.
Okay.
The first one from the 90s.
Yeah, directed by a music video director. Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah, no, that film was kind of a big deal when it came out in 1998, but I remember being excited to go see it and then kind of catching myself and saying, yeah, you know, there's nothing else for this generation of kids.
Yeah, that's so sad. Okay, let's start reviewing some movies. We weren't here last week, so we did not get to review Alice Through the Looking Glass.
I seek a young lady. Her hair?
Yes.
Yellowish. Her name, Alice.
The only person in the room who has seen it is Jim Batts. Jim Batts, what did you think of Alice in the
Looking Glass? Oh, this is a dreary enterprise. It's so lousy that it makes you yearn for the one that Tim Burton did a couple of years ago. Actually, Burton didn't direct this one.
I think it was one of Burton's worst films.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. James Bobbin of the last couple of Muppet films directed this one. And it's just a dreary mess. It starts out with Alice as an adult, and she's the captain of a trade ship. And, you know, it's all girl power stuff. And, of course, once she gets back to England, they try to take the boat away from her. She thinks that the only way to get things back on track is to go through the looking glass.
Wait.
Yeah, what's it?
Are they taking the boat away from her because she's a girl?
That's one of the reasons. The investors, and they want to, you know, kind of get it to, you know, make a lot more money with it and all that. Don't think that a woman should be captain and that sort of thing. This is like the 1860s or 1880s or something like that.
She never would have ever in real life have had a captain position.
No. Never happened back
How
then.
Big is Johnny Depp's role in this film?
He's pretty much the reason for most of the shenanigans, the time travel shenanigans, because the Mad Hatter is dying and his friends are all concerned and they think that Alice can help and finds out that he's all depressed because he lost his family many years ago.
But does he smack his wife around?
No, you don't talk. No,
so
no.
They don't have St. John's wart in Wonderland or any of this. He's depressed. He's going to die of depression. So
Alice has to steal the Kronos device from time itself. Time played by Sacha Baron Cohen.
And was he in the first one?
No. He's a newbie to this one.
He was in Tim Burton's
Sweeney Todd.
Yeah, Sweeney Todd.
Yeah. He and Johnny were in that together. Yeah. And Helena Bonham Carter, who returns as the Wicked Queen.
Anne Hathaway's back.
Yeah. Anne Hathaway has nothing to do in it, practically. Yeah. And you get to find out about the Hathaway and the Helena Bonham characters as when they were kids and why the Queen of Hearts is so mad and why her head's so darn big. It's just CGI piled on top of each other, and, it just drags along.
Right. Sounds bad. Let's move on. It's only number 4 on its second week, so it's not doing very well anyway. But you saw a movie a couple weeks ago, or last week maybe, called Sunset Song.
Yeah, this
and
is
that,
a really
did that open
film.
Friday over at or at the Frontenac?
Yeah, I think it's probably just at the Frontenac.
Right. What's that about?
Well, it's set at the turn of the century, right before the start of World War I. It's sort of a coming of age film about a young woman named Chris Guthrie and her family. Chris is played by, see if I get this name right, Guinness Dine. And,
perfect. Yes. You nailed it.
And, you know, I nailed the landing. Yeah. But she's the smartest girl in her class, another girl empowerment sort of theme here. And but, of course, no one, you know, thinks much of her. They just want her to go home and cook and all that. And she's living with her family. She's got an older brother. She's got a horrible, abusive father played by Peter Mullen, who, takes the bell to his son in an early scene that just is, you know, horrifying. He's got a wife, and they've got two little ones, but at the start of it, the wife gets pregnant again, and it kind of sets her over the edge, and she, you know, succumbs to madness. No, hold on a second.
Asleep.
You're going to nod off before World War I.
Oh, that war.
Yes, the one that destroyed much of that generation. And, of course, that starts up, but not before she settles down with a fella named Ewan, who was the love of her life, who's actually played by a fella named Guthrie. Guthrie. Yeah, I blew that one. But yeah, it's you think this is, you know, masterpiece theater stuff, you know, BBC America stuff, but
it's not.
It's surprising what the areas of sexuality they explore. This is directed by
Terrence Davies.
No. I got the director wrong. The director is actually Peter Mullen. He didn't play the father. But Peter Mullen, who directed The Deep Blue Sea a couple of years ago with Rachel Weisz.
It's Terrence Davies.
Yeah. Is that Terrence Davies?
Yes.
I scrolled on the wrong. Oh, Peter Mullen is the father. So I got it wrong. So I scribbled out.
No, we got each other's back. It's cool.
Well, I'm glad. I mix up
here.
Names all the time. These British people.
Yeah, there's British people. Terrence Davies is kind of a big deal.
So
over
is there World War I battle footage?
Not much. There's a little bit of set in World War II, but we glossed over the sexual awakening.
Okay. Yeah, let me rephrase my question. Is there a lot of nudity?
Yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, surprisingly.
All right.
You know, that's the front neck, the stoic front neck audience was kind of astounded by that at the screening I went to.
It's a long movie, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's long. It's a little over 2 hours, but even with the seats there at the front neck, it seemed like it zipped right by to me.
So did you review it?
I didn't review it. Kate did, it's not a bad flick. But my apologies to Terrence Davies. Sorry.
Okay. Now, had you reviewed it, Jim Batts, how many stars would you have given it?
I would have given it probably at least 4.
All right.
Wow.
Just for this young woman's performance, she's very good.
All right.
So. I'll be honest with you. I'm kind of laughing at it here, but I really wanted to see this movie even before you said that they spend the second half of the movie naked.
A couple of people left. I think that they were kind of surprised and taken aback by that. But you know, the World War One stuff is not as harrowing as the stuff in This Is Our Youth from a couple of years ago, which also was or the recent The Man Who Saw Infinity, which touched on.
I'm just going to show up halfway through. All right, let's move on. We're going to review. Well, Jim recommends Sunset Song. Now let's review the movie that all three of us have seen, but was the biggest box office bomb of the weekend. It only made $4.6 million, although we thought it was a pretty darn funny movie, not a perfect film, and it is called Pup Star. Never stop stopping.
Connor's second album drops today.
Out of 4 possible stars, Rolling Stone has given it the shit emoji. So, mixed. Let's call it mixed reviews.
Mona Lisa, the original basic bitch.
The record label
stars Adam Sandberg.
Andy Sandberg,
and
what was his character's name?
His name is Connor for Real.
Connor for Real, yeah.
See, I got that right. Like, so,
he's a pop star, probably based on a conglomerate of a bunch of pop stars, including Justin Bieber and a bunch of people like that. And it's a mock documentary, which isn't the most original thing in the world, about his rise and fall and rise again and friendships and girlfriends and associates. It is a pretty darn funny movie. Jim reviewed it. Jim Betts reviewed it at WeAreMovieGeeks.com and gave it 4.5 stars. I probably would have given it not quite 4.5, maybe 4. A lot of the jokes did work. It runs a brief under 90 minutes, so it just flies right by. It's very clever. Some of the jokes don't work, but a lot of them do. Enough of them do, certainly, to make me recommend.
Yeah, I was surprised that not all the jokes are in the trailer and the commercials, which is the case with, I think, Nice Guys and with Neighbors too. There's a lot of funny stuff in there, particularly their parody of the tabloid TV show TMZ.
Which I've never seen that TV show, but I knew that they were parodying it, even though I've never seen it. And I knew it was like a really funny parody. And everybody else, I guess, was familiar with it, but everybody was laughing at it.
They were some of the biggest laughs in the screening, and I'm with you, Tom. Yeah. I didn't know the context here, but I assumed that they must be nailing something.
Yeah, Will,
Will
Arnett.
Perfectly. Will Arnett is playing the Harvey Levin character, who's leaning over the cubicles with the ever increasingly larger adult sippy cups, which was a great
joke. Is that what he does on the TV show?
Well, they all have their big cups with the straws in them while they're going picking the bones of celebrities and just gleefully making fun of everybody that they can. But I recall it might have been the Patton Oswalt or somebody like that. The TMZ cameras were following him when he was on his way to the Walgreens or something, and he's like, "Really, guys, do you have nothing better to do than this?"
Wow.
What'd you think of it, Jim Tudor?
Popstar. I was underwhelmed, ultimately. Right. I did laugh quite a bit. I'd say it's a 3 stars. I don't know. After the screening, you commented, Tom, that it felt kind of padded.
Yeah.
And I completely agreed with that. Yeah. It's like, you know, when it's funny, it can be really funny.
Yeah. Even at 85 minutes, it did feel a bit padded.
Yeah, but, yeah. And it is very much in the vein of this as Spinal Tap, except with this Justin Bieber-esque pop star type, which... quite frankly, isn't that shooting fish in a barrel?
That's what I mentioned in my guys. Yeah.
It's, I mean, maybe that's why it's not doing so well, because already mocking that, it's just so easy and predictable. And the way they mock it, I don't think brings anything new to the table.
No, but it makes you laugh, and that's what it's all about.
Yeah, I was surprisingly how much I was laughing during it. It's probably the most I've laughed at a film this year so far. But, considering the last couple, Neighbors 2 is kind of disappointing. But I think it is one of those films that might get discovered once it gets onto video and streaming and all that. I think people will say, hey, I should have seen this in the theater. This was pretty funny. And it's surprising that it's under 90 minutes of being a Judd Apatow production.
Mm-hmm.
And the Kimmy Schmidt TV show had a funny thing that one character has an audition in 12 hours, and he says, that's like three Judd Apatow movies. So brevity is a plus, I think, in comedy.
And a lot of good cameos.
Oh, yeah, you couldn't swing a cat in that movie without hitting someone from Saturday Night Live.
Pink.
A music biz.
Ringo Starr, for goodness sake.
When he's singing that song about being gay, but it's really about not being gay.
Equal Rights, the name of the song. Yeah. That is a classic. You know, they wanted to say, oh, we support the LGBT community, but I'm not part of it.
Right.
That was pretty clever.
It's like a panic thing.
I'm not part of it. I'm not gay, but if I were, I'd support it. And that is a really funny song, and that's early on in the film.
Yeah, there's some funny concert footage in it. And that his two Lonely Island cohorts directed it, the two fellas that play the former boy band members that he kind of pushes
aside. And they made
another
movie a few years ago about motocross. What was
that? Well, that was Hot Rod.
Hot Rod, yeah.
Yeah, but
that was pretty funny, too.
Yeah,
like the same guys wrote it.
But these guys individually have done the MacGruber film. I think one of them directed that.
That's true.
I saw that. That was pretty good.
Yes. Underrated movie.
Yeah. I'm trying to think the other one had done one, a solo film. But then they all wrote the screenplay of it, too. Okay. So,
All right. So we all think pop star never stopping. It's pretty darn funny.
I think that subtitle is the funniest part of the movie, by the way. You can't remember it, but I think Pop Star Never Stop Never Stopping is why that it's called that.
Yeah.
It's such a forced positivity, phony baloney, empty shell of a title that got me there.
Yeah. All right. So there's some movies opening this week. Well, last week, none of us saw Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, so we can't offer our opinion of that.
Another empty shell.
Tonight, we are seeing The Conjuring Part 2.
Stop calling me Janet.
She's such a good girl. What's so wrong with her?
An oppressing spirit will try to force you to commit the ultimate sin.
And what's that?
Murder? Suicide? Or both.
Starring Vera Farmiga and Patrick Wilson recreating their roles from The Conjuring, which was a very scary movie from two or three years ago.
So. Nice retro film there. This one's set in the 70s also. And this one has Frances O'Connor in it as the put-upon mother in England that they come to rescue.
All right, so I will be reviewing that for WeAreMovieGeeks.com. Tomorrow night, Jim is seeing Warcraft.
I am also seeing Warcraft.
Oh, you are. So I thought you were seeing Now You See Me Too, but you're seeing Warcraft.
No, I'm not seeing Now You See Me Too. Now You See Me One was quite
Warcraft
enough.
Looks really awful, but Duncan Jones has directed it, and he's had some success in the past, so I think we're kind of hoping it's not as awful as it looks, I assume.
Yeah, I've never seen all of, speaking of admitting to not seeing things, I've not seen all of Moon. I've just seen bits of it, so I should sit down and see that.
At the Tivoli.
It's terrific. It really is.
I enjoyed Source Code, the little thriller. That's like a good B-movie thriller a couple of years ago.
I'd give the edge to Moon, but Source Code's terrific.
And are you reviewing Warcraft, Jim?
I believe I am, yes.
Jim Betts will be reviewing Warcraft for We Are Movie Geeks later this week. Maggie's Plan, didn't they have a screening of that already?
Yes. Yes.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
That opens Friday. Well, review, I didn't realize you had seen that. Did you see it?
Didn't get to see it, no.
Okay, so Jim Tudor has seen Maggie's Plan. That stars Greta Gerwig and Julianne Moore and Ethan Hawke, and it's a comedy, and it's made by Rebecca Miller.
Yeah, yes. Bill Hader's in that too, isn't he, from Popstar, isn't he?
Yeah, yes. What's that about, Jim?
It's about this young woman, Greta Gerwig. Mm-hmm. She's living in New York City, and she has a plan. There's actually several plans of Maggie's. She plays Maggie, Greta Gerwig does, and she's very Greta Gerwig-esque. If you've ever seen a Greta Gerwig film.
Oh, Frances Ha.
I like her too.
Mistress America last year almost made my top 10.
Always a woman in New York City.
Woman in New York City yet again. And she wants to have a child. She, through a series of wacky circumstances, she wants to get artificially inseminated. So she's looking for somebody to donate. Anyway, she gets the guy to donate and she becomes pregnant. Cut to 2 years later, she's fallen in love and married Ethan Hawke. The assumption is that Ethan Hawke is the child's father.
I was going to ask that, if he was the donor.
He's not the donor, but she's like in the process of doing the donor injection thing when Ethan Hawke knocks on the door, and you know they had their meet cute earlier that day, and the implication is that then they get together. So they get married, and then the gist of the movie, and this is probably the most interesting aspect of it, is that she realizes that maybe falling in love with him was a mistake and that he really needs to go back to his first wife, and she concocts a plan to basically get them back together.
She's got a parent trap though.
Yeah, but isn't any good.
It's all right. It
doesn't look very good in the trailer. I like her in those Noah Baumbach movies.
Now I was under the impression from the trailer that she was having a fling with this married guy played by Ethan Hawke and then tires of him and then wants to get him back with his wife and that they're still married, but that's not the case. It misled me.
She is with him like through and through at that point in the movie.
Oh, okay.
And she needs to get rid of him because he's a wuss. He's a book writing wuss, and he doesn't know what's going on. So,
well, Julian's got some kind of accent in this. Playing a German or something?
Weird. Weird. Her accent that she's doing this. Very German militant woman with her hair pulled back tight.
She's doing the Big Lebowski character again, almost, it sounds like.
Right. It's just telegraphing reasons why nice guy Ethan Hawke needs to get away from this shrew.
Are you reviewing that for one of your sites this weekend?
No. It's already been reviewed on Zeke Film.
Oh, I see. So were you to review it, out of a scale of 1 to 5, how many stars would you give it?
2.5.
2.5.
It's fine. It's something... Again, you could watch it in your hotel room and be content, but an airplane. People were comparing it to Woody Allen movies.
People always want to compare things to Woody
Allen.
Exactly. Well, I think Noah Baumbach is sort of a good successor to Woody Allen, but
I agree.
I don't know about Rebecca Miller.
He's better. This is not on the level of the Noah Baumbach film.
All right. So Jim doesn't really recommend Maggie's Plan.
Sorry.
Just for the Greta Gerwig purist.
That's
right.
And then the other movie that somebody's seeing is Now You See Me 2.
Yes, I believe Kate saw it last Thursday night, so she'll be reviewing. And I saw the first one. You saw the first one.
I didn't like the first one.
The first one's
pretty
lousy.
Jesse Eisenberg, Mark Ruffalo, Woody Harrelson are all back. Dave Franco, but Lizzie Kaplan has replaced Isla Fisher. Do we know why?
I think she was having a kid.
Does she play the same character? Probably not.
No, it's a different character they're producing. It's another sequel. No one asked for.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. I mean, who cares? You Don't See Me Too. How about that?
Yeah.
All right. So we'll let you know what we think of Now You See Me Too next week. If we see it.
We will.
All right. Let's talk about some local stuff. We did trivia night last Friday.
We did.
Oh,
Cinema
St.
Louis' I Love Movies trivia. And I assembled the winning team for the 10th year in a row, except for that 1 year I was out of town. And Jim and Jim and myself are on the winning team, and we got 97 out of 100. We beat Lynn and Renee's team by 3 points.
Yes. Narrowly, but once again, we pulled it in.
We did.
Yeah.
And they're tough questions. John Tucci is the guy who's...
And
no thanks to Betty Davis, for gosh sakes.
Betty Davis category.
Oh my goodness! Yeah, I think the questions were, well, we didn't know her birth name, her first name.
Yeah,
which you would think would be Elizabeth, being Betty and all of sure for Elizabeth, but that's too easy.
Nope.
So it's actually Ruth.
Who knew?
Yes,
not us.
I did. I know Barbara Stanwyck's real name, but not Betty.
So that was a lot of fun. Maybe we'll team up again next year.
Oh yeah,
maybe
maybe
if you're in town.
Yeah. But last weekend at the Tivoli, they showed Purple Rain at the Midnight Show at the Tivoli, which I host. Except I didn't host this past weekend because I was out of town. I assume they had a pretty decent crowd for
I would imagine, with Prince just passing and last month or whenever that was. All of these retrospective kind of...
Yeah, the AMC theaters were packing them in when they were showing Purple Rain, you know, right after his passing, I remember. Remember you saying that?
And this weekend, Midnight's Friday and Saturday, is The Breakfast Club. Starring Ally Sheedy, wouldn't you say she was in some... she's in the X-Men movie?
She is in the X-Men film playing a school teacher, and I was quite surprised to see her in that. And Judd Nelson. Almost said Judd Hirsch.
Judd Nelson.
And Emilio Estevez. Emilio Estevez. Of course, as you said, Ally Sheedy. I'm just forgetting. I'm blanking on
Molly Ringwald.
Molly Ringwald.
She was the John Hughes queen, right?
For a while. And Anthony Michael Hall's in this, too, I believe.
Yeah, that's true.
And Paul Gleason as the hard-edged principal, the teacher.
He just died about a year ago.
Now, do you guys like John Hughes movies?
In general, they're okay. I don't revisit them very often.
I think I enjoyed 16 Candles more than Breakfast Club.
Is Home Alone John Hughes?
That's
technically.
But Chris Columbus directed it.
Right. I like that. I like Planes, Trains, and Automobiles.
Planes, Trains is terrific.
I like Ferris Bueller okay, but you know, I watched it with my daughter not too long ago.
And that's turning 30.
Yeah,
and we'll have a post about that turning 30 on Zeke Film on the 11th, day it turns 30.
Oh, my goodness. Hard to believe.
So that's this Friday and Saturday night, The Breakfast Club over at the Tivoli at midnight, and I will be there. This past weekend, did either of you guys go to Late Night Grindhouse to see Cat in the Brain?
No, I didn't. I had to work early the next morning, so I didn't think I should test myself on
that. I hate to miss Late Night Grindhouse.
I have to miss Late Night Grindhouse. It doesn't work for me at this phase of life. It's late night nap is what it turns into. I just can't. Andy Treufenbach and everything he does, I'm a big fan. I just, when the day comes where I can stay up again, I will be there.
You especially fall asleep since they moved over to the Moolah because you sit in these comfy leather couches.
It makes
it a lot easier to fall asleep.
What have they done? Oh, those couches. Yeah.
All right. Well, I don't know what size of crowd he had, but he probably had a pretty decent crowd. He always does. Next month, I don't know the dates. I think it might be July 2nd and 3rd, but maybe it's the weekend after that. He has shows in Deep Red, which is my favorite Dario Argento film. Have you ever seen Deep Red?
Yes. I don't think I've seen the whole thing. Deep Red, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. No,
David Hemmings and Dario Nicolodi.
Oh, okay.
It's really good. It's
great
it's
use of the color red.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Deep, too.
It's like
deep,
70s?
76. Yeah. Or maybe 75. It was before Suspiria, and Suspiria was 77.
Mm.
I used to see it at the drive-in all the time back in the late 70s and early 80s. They reissued it under the title The Hatchet Murders, and they cut it down to 90 minutes. And I used to see it over and over, and I loved it.
Yeah.
And then when it came out on DVD, you know, in the 90s, they restored it, and it's 2 hours and 7 minutes.
Okay.
And a lot of the stuff that doesn't make any sense in the 90-minute version is explained. But I tell you the truth, I still prefer the 90-minute version.
It gets to the good stuff quicker.
Yeah, it does. It moves. It's paced better.
Part of the charm of some of these Italian horror films, isn't it? The incomprehensibility is part of the charm.
That's right. And about it.
I think Deep Red is one of Argento's
masterpiece.
Yeah, it really is. People's horror fans definitely need to see that.
Mm-hmm. And it's got a great score by Goblin, a great driving rock and roll score by Goblin. Really
went on to do the Dawn of the Dead score.
That's
didn't
right.
They?
Yeah, that's right.
And Suspiria.
I'd say Suspiria is probably the most famous score.
Absolutely,
and that's probably Argento's most famous film, Suspiria, which Annie has shown at Late Night Grindhouse. He showed Suspiria a couple years ago.
Sidebar here. Suspiria. One of our Zeke film contributors who's a huge horror nut, he claims that Suspiria is the most divisive horror film ever made, or certainly one of them.
Divisive?
Are you up on this?
I
didn't realize. I thought everybody...
I mean, people love it or hate it? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. I thought Suspiria was pretty much universally hailed as a great film.
I disagree with your friend.
Okay.
But when I was 16, my 16th birthday, you know what I did on my 16th birthday?
No.
I got my driver's license in the morning and went to the 66 drive-in that night and saw Suspiria.
That's all you did that day.
That's right. And it was double feature with House on Skull Mountain, which is kind of a snooze.
But Suspiria.
Suspiria was wonderful. And I didn't know who Argento was. This was 1977. I became a huge fan of Argento later on when I was in college and saw Cat of Nine Tails and Bird of the Crystal Plumage and Inferno and a bunch of others.
Can we go back into the first segment and I'll add Argento to my director's list? Okay. I forgot about these Italian guys.
Oh, okay. I met Argento. He signed my Suspiria poster, as did two of the Italian actresses who were in the film.
You win.
Nice.
I do.
Nice.
I win. That's right. Because I have the most toys.
You win life.
Yeah. All right, so that is sometime in July, Deep Red. We'll get to
be on the lookout for that.
We'll get to the details here soon enough. Tomorrow night is 16mm double feature night.
Awesome.
And that is a show that I host over at the Way Out Club. I show 16mm prints, two of them, every first Tuesday of every month. And tomorrow night I'm showing at 8 o'clock Young Frankenstein, starring Gene Wilder and Peter Boyle and Feldman.
My favorite film of all time.
Is it your favorite film?
Of all time.
Of all time.
You're missing it because you're going to see Warcraft.
Yeah, well, I'm suffering for my art, I suppose. Yes.
How is the quality of this print of
Super
Young Frankenstein?
I watched it twice. It belongs to my buddy Roger Burke. He showed it at Schlafly once, and we showed it at the Way Out Club once.
Yeah, I saw it the last time I was at the Way Out Club. It's a really nice print. Yeah,
it's gorgeous.
I'd consider going if there were a second film.
There is a second film,
what?
As a matter of fact. That's why we call it Double Feature Night.
Young
Frankenstein will probably start at 8, and then at 10 we're going to show a gangster movie from 1975 called Capone.
Wow.
Capone stars Ben Gazzara as Al Capone, and Sylvester Stallone is his right-hand man, Frank Nitti, and Susan Blakely is his Maul, who does several nude scenes, and John Cassavetes and Harry Gardino. It's a great movie. I saw it when I was 13 years old. I think I've told this story before, but I'll tell it again. I used to ride my bike up to the DePere 4. I think it's now it's the DePere 14.
Oh, yeah.
And I would ask strange men in the parking lot to buy my tickets to R-rated movies. I was so obsessed with seeing R-rated movies. And Capone was one of the films that I saw under those circumstances.
How did it go?
Oh, it was great. I think the first or... You know, back in those days, the first or second guy would say, oh, sure, kid, whatever. It was never weird. I think today... Oh. It would be weird.
Yes.
We had to work hard to get into our R-rated films back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
But it was worth it.
Yes.
I also saw Scorchy with Connie Stevens under those circumstances.
Scorchy.
Yeah. It's a really funny movie where Connie Stevens gets naked and William Smith plays the villain.
She's like a policewoman.
Yes.
What more do you need to know?
Oh, yeah. I remember trying, getting all prepared to see The Exorcist in 75 and concerned that they weren't going to let me in and all that. And, of course, they didn't even ask for any IDs.
No.
All that worry and concern and work was for nothing.
Now kids can watch X-rated movies on their phones.
Yeah. I don't know. Is this a better world we're living in? It's just...
Not necessarily.
The kids don't understand the hoops that previous generations had to jump through.
What was the first R-rated movie you saw, do you recall? But you see, you're in the VHS age. Jim and I had to...
Yeah, no, I was... it depends on how we define this. I mean, I had a babysitter watching a network television broadcast of The Exorcist when I was in kindergarten. Mm. And my parents weren't at home.
But it would have been cut.
Yeah, it was cut, but I wouldn't know. I mean, it was still terrifying, except... I was enamored with it. The movie that scared me as a kid watching it over some babysitter's shoulder was called The Little Girl Who Lives Down the Lane.
Jodie Foster.
With Jodie Foster.
Yeah. That just came out on Blu-ray.
Martin Sheen, right?
To this day, I have not revisited that movie, but I have images of it etched in my mind from when I was like 6 or 7.
Mm.
And yeah, scary stuff that. But I'd say the first R-rated movie I went to in the theater might be Lethal Weapon 2 or Die Hard.
What was the first R-rated movie you saw at the theater, Jim?
I'm pretty certain it was The Last Picture Show.
Oh, there we go. 1971.
Dad took us to see that. And Cybill Shepherd, man. Yeah. That's just fantastic.
My first R-rated movie was also in 1971. It was The French Connection. My dad took me to see The French Connection. And I would have been 8, I guess.
Classy.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
My dad was really cool about taking me to R-rated movies. Like, until we saw Flesh Gordon. And then he, halfway through, he grabbed me by the ear and dragged me out of the theater.
We're done.
And said, we're not going to see any more R-rated movies.
Flesh Gordon.
Course,
what was he?
Like 2 weeks. Flesh Gordon.
Yeah, was this a surprise?
Toned down from the X-rated version.
Yeah,
that mostly went out.
But it was still, nonstop nudity. And I remember my dad pretended like he was asleep, and then he couldn't take it anymore.
Yeah, I couldn't. This is too awkward. I'm considering, I'm the other kind of dad where I'm maybe a little overprotective. Yeah. I'm like, do I take my 10-year-old son to see Warcraft tomorrow night? I don't know if that's
what's it rated.
It's PG. It's PG-13, but for bone crunching action, and he's a little on the sensitive side, but he wants to see this, and I don't know. It's like, do I?
Right. Oh, there was a lot of parents had that problem with Deadpool. The kids were begging to see
that. That's a
So my next 16mm double feature night will be July 5th, and I can announce right here for the first time. Nobody knows what I'm showing.
We don't.
I wish I knew just one of them.
Well, I'm showing two of them, and the first one at 8 o'clock, 1951, sci-fi classic. Black and white.
Oh, Patricia Neal. Gort. Yes.
It's a day. Something about a day.
Yeah. The day the earth stood still. Not the Keanu Reeves version.
And the director's really smart. His name is Robert Wise.
That's right. He's a wise guy. All right, so that's 8 o'clock, 1951 science fiction classic, Day the Earth Stood Still. At 10 o'clock, The second feature will actually be a concert film.
Oh, okay.
Oh, hold
is
on.
It the, is it the...
From 1981.
1980, Last Waltz?
Is it Last Waltz? No.
It is not. And it's not a music concert film. It is a comedy concert film.
Oh, see, that's...
Oh,
you
okay.
Tricked us.
It's not Richard Pryor.
Richard Pryor live on the Sunset Strip.
Yes.
That's the name of it. We'll be showing that.
Is
that
the one
on HBO a lot?
Is
when
that
I
the
first
one,
got HBO.
Is that the one where he's... No, it's not the one where he's in the red shirt.
I think
just Richard Pryor.
I thought it was a red suit.
Oh, okay. Well, there's is it was now this was after the fire.
Yeah, it was after the fire.
Okay, so yeah. It is the second one. I remember the first one. He's in a red shirt. And,
that was like an HBO special.
Yeah, and he's talking about his heart attacks. It's hysterical. But yeah, at the end of this concert, he does address the whole fire thing. So I know you've been telling jokes about.
And then there was one
then.
Called Richard Pryor Then and Now a couple years after that.
And this is July 5th.
July 5th, Tuesday at 8 o'clock.
The perfect night for fans of classic sci-fi and Richard Pryor.
There you go. Okay.
Yes.
That is a
classic stand-up
double feature.
Yes.
Night. One other local thing I wanted to talk about. Webster University has been doing this thing, Best Cinematography Series. And last month they showed The Good Earth, which I saw. And it has spectacular cinematography, Oscar winning.
Right.
But they just showed like a DVD. They didn't show a Blu-ray. They showed a DVD that hadn't been remastered, and it didn't look all that great.
Oh, that's too bad. I wonder why that made the cut.
Well, it won the Oscar for Best Cinematography. Yeah.
And that's why.
That's
okay.
why. And then this weekend, another movie that won the Oscar for Best Cinematography, The Picture of Dorian Gray from 1944.
Oh, yeah.
Every year something wins the Oscar for Best Cinematography,
true.
And they've got a 30-year range here that they're
actually,
working
back
with.
In those days, they had color and black and white, so actually two movies would win cinematography back in...
Well, this is only black and white that they're doing, right?
I guess. Yeah,
it is.
Because they're doing On the Waterfront next month.
That's beautiful.
Picture of Dorian Gray is a fun movie. It has a really super cute 19-year-old Angela Lansbury in it.
Donna Reed's the main guy, isn't she?
Yes,
yes.
George Sanders.
So great. Yeah, you know, Herb Hadfield is Dorian himself, and George kind of narrates it. And is he playing like an Oscar Wilde type character? I guess
I would imagine.
Yeah, and as I understand that the actual portrait, I guess, is at the Art Institute of Chicago.
I saw it there a couple years ago, and I didn't know it was there. And I was walking around, I go, "Holy crap! There's a
now in the print itself." Is when they finally show the portrait? Is that it?
Yeah,
that footage is in color.
Yeah, there's a color shot of the portrait at the end of the film. I just ruined it though; I just gave it away.
The picture of
it's
Dorian
a great
Gray.
Picture, yeah. It's a great...
it's a good movie. It's a
great portrait.
Movie. Yeah, so I'm glad they're showing it. I've never seen it on the big screen. What else we got? We got a couple more minutes. You guys want to talk about anything else?
Well, we mentioned about an actor that had passed while we were off air, the great Bert Cook. How you pronounce his last name, the Asian actor.
Pato.
Yes. Well, he's I believe he's done a couple of Bond films, and I think he might have been in one of the Hammer films, but he has achieved screen immortality as Kato, the hapless house servant of Inspector Clouseau, who has been instructed to attack him unannounced and, you know, surprise him at any time.
Keep him on his toes.
Oh, yes, and that's been some of the funniest sequences in the certainly in the later Peter Sellers films.
I saw all those at the theater back in the 70s, those Pink Panther movies. Those were really popular.
Oh, yeah, huge hits. Yeah. And everybody loved when he would just come after Clouseau. It's sometimes even at the end of the movies, I think there's a couple of them that end with him getting attacked.
Mm-hmm.
So he's a great actor.
And Herbert Lom was so good in those, too.
Oh, yeah.
He just died a couple years ago. All right, well, we got another minute or two. What else is going on? Jim, you got anything coming up?
I've seen this film that's showing at Webster. I think it's probably closing tonight, but it's called The Dying of the Light, and it's a documentary that is a tribute to projectionists of celluloid, all these people. And it really talks about this overlooked aspect of movie going that, you know, we would for years take for granted. These people that are up in the booth in the dark fighting with these rickety machines and these carbon arc flames, just trying to do what they can to keep the projectors running and doing the real change seamlessly. They're the unsung heroes of movies.
Are.
And The Dying of the Light is the doc. It's at Webster closing on June 7th, which is today
tomorrow.
For us. Or tomorrow?
Tomorrow.
Is it tomorrow?
Well, today's the 6th.
Oh, today's the 6th. Okay, so you've got a couple more days if you're listening to this. And then after that, I'd say look for it on streaming. Not to be confused with a Nicolas Cage movie directed by Paul Schrader of the same name, Dying of the Light. This is a documentary called The Dying of the Light.
Okay. These young digital projectionists don't know how tough the old projectionists
are. Yeah, I mean, I imagine dealing with those hot bulbs. I imagine they just get singed all the time.
People have, they're grizzled veterans when they're on camera talking. They have their stories.
Oh, yeah.
And then they show, you know, the new technology, and it's an IT guy at a touchscreen.
Right. Well, we're going to have to wrap this show up, but we'll be back next week. And we can review The Conjuring 2 and Warcraft. And maybe Now You See Me 2 if one of us sees it. And, and Michelle's going to call in next week and talk about some whatever she's up to and the top 10 and stuff like that. But for now, Jim Tudor, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you, guys.
We'll get you back on here again.
Yeah, save my bacon. I appreciate it.
All right. All right. But for now, I'm Tom Stockman.
Jim Batts.
Jim Tudor.
And be sure to listen to us again next week.
Black leather, rock. Black leather, ta ta ta. Black leather.
Oh, howdy, Steve. Hello, Don. Hey.